Hello, Cochrane. This is Leah Weens, Chair of Sport for Life Cochrane. I'm so excited today to be announcing our fourth, I think, in the line of our Cochrane Sparkler interviews, which is our sport, physical activity, and recreation leaders. And we have two amazing champions with us here today. So we have Faliha Ahmad from the Rocky View Immigrant Services and the Calgary Catholic Immigrant Society. And we also have Jaya Dixit from the Cochrane Immigrant Services Committee, and she's the board director. And so we've recently had a great conversation with them, sharing ideas about how we can engage the immigrant population in Cochrane in sport and physical activity, getting an awareness of what is actually already happening and how we can build on that. So, thank you both of you for joining us here today.
Thank you for having us, Leah.
Awesome. Well, I think what I'll do maybe is I'll start with you, Faliha, and if you could just tell us about yourself, your family, maybe how you got involved in this work, and if there are any sport or physical activities that you like to participate in yourself.
So my husband's a veterinarian and I'm a proud mom of four beautiful children. So that's my busy home life. And together we love to hike. I love nature. I love yoga, Pilates classes. Mm. So these are my side gigs to sort of stay functioning. And then aside from that, how I got into this work, I've always loved culture. I love traditions and I love people. And I love to help for free because I'm a horrible business person. So this sort of, this opportunity just fit all the stuff I was looking for to do in life. And that's why I love my job. I've been working with Calgary Catholic Immigration Society, which is the major company out in downtown Calgary. And then I cover the rural area. So it's a project of that company, which is Rocky View Immigrant Service. Basically I'm a settlement counselor, community connector, and program coordinator. So I wear lots of hats all day. To help integrate and settle newcomers within the communities. Settlement, I feel, is one word, but the process and the experience is so diverse, it could be a lifelong project. And I feel really happy to be one of the initial persons that people connect to and then build that bond. And it's a new learning for me every day too, because not everybody could relate to a situation in the same way. So you have to figure out and know a little bit of their culture, of their values, of where, which part of the countries they're coming from, is it worn, how much trauma they're carrying, what emotions they're feeling, and then work accordingly.
Yes, amazing. That's, and the word you use there, community connector, connector, and that's, I guess, why you're so open to even speaking with us, because I don't think sport would be the first thing that the people moving to Canada would be thinking of, or even within your settlement services. So yeah, it's great that we have you and your kind of insight and vision to just see some of those connections. So excited to dive into those a little more deeply today.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. And sports actually is a big part of a lot of newcomers. They all have their national sports that they love and take great pride in playing. But unfortunately, you're right. It's not the first thing that they need to get to them when they come. There's so many other struggles that they need to face and move forward from.
Absolutely. All right, Jaya, over to you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. I think Faliha set me up perfectly because she talked about how settlement can be, you know, a lifelong process. And so I didn't come to Canada as an immigrant. I am the daughter of immigrants, but, you know, watching my, the, you know, triumphs and struggles of my own parents in, you know, settling and integrating in Canadian society, which, you know, they started even before I was born. I was born here in Canada, has really like shaped how I see systems and places and who they welcome and where their biases are. So I'm really grateful for that level of education that was sort of like latently built into how I see the world. So I was born in Regina, Saskatchewan. I grew up in Ottawa. I'm one of three girls. I have two older sisters. Both of my sisters were really gifted, excellent athletes. So I was like a latecomer to sports, but I'm you know, introducing the sport piece of about me really early on to say, you know, I've had a connection to sports since I was a teenager, when I started to get pretty seriously involved in field hockey, first at the high school level, then regionally, then provincially, then I played in university. So I've had a lot of time to explore and experience sport, which is something I'm really grateful for. Now, I have three little kids. My husband was also really athletic. For us, being active here in Cochrane, like in the beautiful in Rocky Mountains, is a huge part of what we want and need to replenish and stay healthy and teach our kids just to love fresh air, being outdoors, the joy and privilege of moving their bodies. So, sports and life, like, it's all connected and integrated to me. Cochrane as a town has so much to offer. And part of that is so many spaces to recreate in every imaginable way, from just great community playgrounds to, you know, a great sports and recreation center to the pump track and the skate park and all of that. So we like to get out and take part in as much of that as we can. And my involvement with the Cochrane Immigrant Services Committee is pretty recent. I just joined this board of amazing directors and volunteers about 6 months ago. By training, I'm a sociologist. I work as an equity, diversity, and inclusion advisor at the University of Calgary. So, you know, I kind of spend my days thinking about what are the biases and barriers and systems, organizations, structures, and teams that we can just awaken ourselves to. They're there. Some of them we see, some of them we're aware of, some of them we just take for granted. So a big part of my job is just helping people develop vocabularies and education and tools first to see it in themselves and the places they are, and then to form concrete and specific action plans for, you know, how they want to prevent those kinds of things from continuing to reproduce, or, you know, how to foster inclusive communities or projects or teams. So when I'm, you know, when I'm sitting with this board, hearing about, you know, what's the experience of people settling and how do we support that process in kind of backstage and front stage ways, I'm thinking about a lot of the same questions, but mostly I'm really wanting to gain the insights of, you know, really putting the experience of newcomers at the center and letting that inform what do we do. It's not that I have a set of ideas that I want to stamp down. It's that I can maybe support some frameworks or processes or initiatives, but that the way forward is really guided by that expert viewpoint of people who are seeing Cochrane through these, like, you know, they're seeing it in strange and new eyes. And those are just not ways of seeing and experiencing the community that are available to us if we've been here for a long time. So that's a really big way of saying, you know, I'm someone who lives in Cochrane, have a family, I'm raising them here. Being active is really important to us. Knowing who's in our community and connecting with them is important. And all of these things seem very interlinked. So I'm really excited to be here and dig into it.
Nice. Another great parallel to where you talk about letting the person, the individual, guide it. And when what we really want in our sport and physical activity is to be participant-centered or athlete-centered. So it's really it's really great to see how the philosophies and the approach really aligns, and that no more is it, you know, top down and the coach just creates little kind of robots that just follow instructions. But what is that? What fuels that child? What motivates them? What scares them? What do, you know, and how can we structure a program with that in mind, so that everybody develops and grows and experiences something that is meaningful to them. So it's, yeah, the parallels are just going to continue coming, I think. So you mentioned quite a bit about, like, what's that experience of families coming to settle in Cochrane. So maybe I'll get Faliha to answer that one first, and then Jai, you can jump in on it as well. So yeah, maybe just give us a picture through the eyes of an immigrant family coming to Cochrane, and how do they perceive what's happening and what they see. Faliha, go ahead.
So aside from being the Settlement Council for Rocky Immigrant Services, I also chaired the Advisory Committee for Cochrane Immigrant Service Committee. So that's how I'm connected with them. And I think Cochrane has come a long way with its diversity and inclusive community work. If I compare it back to even as far as 2014, 2015, I feel it's today used as a role model for many communities to how like what a superb job it's doing in helping with that integration project, and also to build that sense of belonging for the families. So it's not only you welcome surfacely, but it's actually to feel part of the community, and it's regardless from where you came from or how long you've been within the community. And that's a feedback I get from many of my clients. Yes, there's struggles as transportation, as traveling out to Calgary for appointments, maybe for upgrading their education. Those are settlement struggles. But if I talk about the emotional connection, I feel Cochrane is just one of the best communities that one can enter and start their life in. And people always tell me, oh, you're like those mothers with the favorite child because I work around the Rocky View area. But I really do get such a positive feedback. And then it's such a giving community. It's a matter of just putting an ad, like a little Facebook ad out that someone is in need of so-and-so. And it's overwhelming how many people come out to help. And I think that's a really beautiful characteristic of the people in Cochrane.
Yeah, I think we need to tell that story more often. I don't know if that would be something, you know, as someone who's lived in Cochrane for almost 18 years now, and 18, 19 years, that, you know, it's another point of pride for our community. So I think that, yeah, that's another thing that we'll highlight.
It definitely is. Yeah.
Nice.
Not sure if I answered your question, but
that's
passionate good. Talking about, if you're talking work and clients and communities, I just lose track. I'm like just so into it.
Yeah, no, it's all good. I love it. Love it. Well, Jayad, what about, again, just maybe more either building on what Fleeha said or even maybe moving into that. I'm assuming there's a lot of logistical pieces when a family first moves to the community or an individual. And then at what point would they start to be like looking for opportunities to engage in sport and physical activity? And then where do they generally go first in your experience? Maybe there's not a one size fits all, but what are you're kind of seeing out there?
So in full disclosure, I won't have the answers to some of those questions, but I'm actually going to change kind of the angle of that question a little bit and say, you know, that when we're thinking about sports and recreation, like those are really organized models or ways of moving your body. And I think we're really tempted, like it's really tempting or like the easy place mentally to go when we're talking about any community, whether it's community of immigrants or settlement, is to like homogenize, right? To be like all immigrants, all people settling. But the truth is we're talking about, I mean, as broad as the world is, right? Like as many countries and nationalities and cultures as there are. And that's what's so amazing about Canada is that we just have that representation here. So I don't think there will be norms. I don't think there will be averages. I think there may be patterns that maybe like Fleeha can really speak to in terms of people coming from high trauma situations and what their priorities will be and, you know, where getting into things like organized sports will fall. But if we just step back from it, just think about all of us, like from a completely, you know, if we just eliminate kind of the us, them, othering language, like what do we need as people? Even in hard situations, like we might need to take a walk around the block. We might need to go for a run. We might get to know our community by borrowing our neighbor's bike and riding around it. Like the need to move is very human. Before we even impose, like, I shouldn't say impose, before we introduce opportunities to do it in organized ways. So I would say very likely the need is immediate. Kids need to go outside and play as soon as they get off a plane, right? They don't need to go outside when mom and dad or, you know, mom and dad or whatever the constitution of the family is or the parents, when everyone's had a chance to like sit down, look at the budget, understand how sports work, figure out transportation. If that's the case, some families will never get those opportunities. So, I mean, access to play and sport is like as basic as like, is there a playground or a green space around the corner? And are the people in those spaces also like, I mean, when we talk about inclusive sport, we're talking about everyone in the community, right? We're talking about the kids playing soccer on the corner and whether they're open to saying, come play with us, or don't worry if you can't say it in English, just kick the ball to me. You know, like sport can be very nonverbal too, right? So yeah, I think there are really important questions you're asking about when are people ready And are the structures ready as well? Those are important questions that I think are we have to grapple with as a community, but there are like simpler questions about how accessible are, you know, like is the ability to move there for people, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, that, and that can even be like outside of organized sports can be even access to like, is there a bike lending program? Is there, and we're starting to see libraries do stuff like this and stuff, you know, too. And it's tempting to think that there's a right time for people to engage in sports on the basis of when they have their, you know, their priorities or their important pieces settled. And again, I think Fleeha will probably have the most textured sense of how individual that is just based on all of this experience she has working with families. But I think if you ask families when they're ready versus when it's possible, they'd probably say, we're ready as soon as we get here for our kids to have a place to go and something to do. Whether or not that's possible is different.
Right. And probably depending where they're coming from too, if you're coming from a place that was very unsafe as far as like being mm-hmm. outdoors or there was an access, then you're right. It would be just as easy as opening up your back door and going to the park in your neighborhood. And in many cases, it might be, yeah, the play starts to come back maybe if that had been lost, or then other places may be just the same, or maybe, yeah, I get your point there that it's just so individual. And yet, I guess at the same time, do we have a sense, and maybe we don't have that sense yet, of the level of whether it's physical activity across the board, however we define that, do you think that there would be a gap compared to say kids who've grown up here? Do we have a sense of that, I guess, at this point, like, or where are the gaps? Maybe, I guess I should ask if you know, if you're aware of that, maybe Fleeha, you can start on that one. And then
Jen. I think I completely agree with Jaya, like no matter from which traumatic situations the families are coming, the parents take a different route because they have like worries like employment and financial and housing and all these, you know, storms in their brain, right? But I'm a big advocate of healthy living and exercising. And exercise could be in any form and any shape, because I just feel if you're healthy inside, you'll just see everything in a different light, right? As far as kids are concerned, like, honestly, I feel they're ready the next day. Like, I have families coming and I'm working with the volunteers who have bikes and stuff like that. They're given a bike just the next day because it's summer right now. Or I'll introduce them to the library for the snowshoes or all those other things. Like, they're ready to just, you know, get right into it. Like, they're so vibrant. Like, I love the mind of a child. Like, they just want to jump into everything. They don't even know about the pros or the cons. They're like, let's just try it. Let's just do it, right? But I think the struggles lie with the financial barriers and transportation, because to get to a point, it's always challenging if mom and dad are working or different hours. Where do you drop the kid? What time do you pick the children up? So if you have two children in two different places. So these kind of things are a little struggles in the initial stage, because the parents are so focused on working as many hours as they can, or trying to get whatever job they can or whatever shift they can. And the other thing is financial. It's so overwhelming for families to afford like the sports, basically. So like the Filipino Association in Cochrane, they have the basketball club, or like there's a lot of opportunities and lots of kids join in. But I feel for the initial families, it's a struggle due to financial and the time. But that's not to say that if they were given options, they wouldn't take it. They would grab it in like a minute. Because like I said, most of the newcomers, they're so passionate about sports. It could be soccer, it could be cricket, it could be just something to try in the snow. It could be just going crazy bike riding all day. And then the fortunate part is Cochrane has some of the most beautiful trails. So you don't even have to step like far away from it. You could just be within your community and enjoy the mountains, the greenery, the nature, like Glenville Provincial Park. It's a hidden treasure. So
that's amazing. Yeah.
So yeah. Sports, I feel if given an opportunity, I don't feel anyone would hold back on it.
Right. Okay. I think that's, yeah, that's fantastic. So unlike, or it's same to any other child or any other family. Yeah. We all kind of have a desire to move. We love to move. It makes us feel good. It gives us all those health benefits. And you, one of you mentioned something really important too, around that whole sense of belonging and how Cochrane does a really good job of that. So maybe, Jaya, maybe I'll throw it back to you and ask you, recently you attended a Cochrane Sport Network meeting. So you got a sense a little bit about the sport community, and there's a lot of interest in our sport organizations around inclusion and how to be more accessible and open, either financially or socially or physically, to broaden, you know, the ability for all Cochrane youth to participate if they are so interested. So maybe, Jai, do you have a sense of, I guess, some advice or some opportunities to that you've either seen a success story or what you would like to see supported to kind of foster accessibility across the board?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess the first thing is I'll say it was a real privilege and pleasure to sit in on that session. And in part, because not only was there, you know, really kind of an expert professional point of view from the facilitator, but also like a parent voice about like, what is the experience of parenting a child with a disability in this zone? And again, like just coming back to that athlete person, participant centered model, you know, we might not be hearing from the child themselves, but we're getting the viewpoint of the person who's really got to arrange all the logistics and who cares about the emotional well-being of that person. So just kind of give us all of these, you know, like really incredible detailed, you know, accounts around things that seem so simple and yet are such a big deal. And the great thing about that is it makes you realize that although it can be very overwhelming to be like, oh my gosh, inclusion, everyone, we have to change things. Like people can really get into a bit of a tailspin because it's very overwhelming. But when you have opportunities to bring those voices into the center, to talk you through what it's like to get ready to go to the field, what it's like to talk to the coach, what things you're worried about that you didn't realize you could just ask for, really makes you cognizant of how these huge efforts start with very small steps. Yeah. Small incremental changes that a whole team commits to doing for a month or two, 6 to 12 months. And so I'd say the first thing is that any organization has to have a discussion internally about whether inclusion, equity, diversity, accessibility, all those things, whether they see those as core to sports excellence and leadership excellence. And the answer has to be yes. I mean, in order to proceed. So I think the first thing is that there has to be some consensus that there are intentions and, you know, desires to see a greater group of people participating and to really rethink and broaden the notion of what excellence in what you're doing means. And so, you know, at that point, you know, people will have a conversation. They're like, yes, this sounds good. Like we're all on board for this. Okay, now what? And, you know, in the perfect world, municipalities, towns, like we'd have access to really good data about who's in our town. So then we could say, how does this stack up with who we see in our events? How does it stack up with the constitution of our board? How does it stack up with our staff, you know, our volunteers? Who's missing here and why? And, you know, not everyone has the tools to do that assessment, and it doesn't have to be a big onerous. You can sit down, you know, with your pal beside you, look at a data sheet, and these are great things for community organizations to ask for, right? This is part of really good municipal strategic planning is who's here. We should have disaggregated data about, you know, what is the makeup of our society or our social, you know, our social space in terms of racialized minorities, women and gender minorities, indigenous peoples, persons with disabilities, members of the LGBTQ2S+ community. When we have that super high quality data, we can do like a gap analysis and be like, oh my gosh, very little of this is represented in what we do. And then you can really start to think about like, how do we want to target some action? So some organizations will start by thinking about particular groups, and they might say like, you know, in our case, let's form a linkage with another, you know, we don't have to learn everything and do everything. Let's go find some experts. That could be a board, that could be a panel. We could put out a special call for, you know, community members who will be compensated to come sit on a panel and talk us through this, like have some engagement and learn about why people might not feel welcome in your space, or, you know, what things they might want to see in order to know that they feel comfortable bringing their kids, or, you know, start to understand what those barriers are. And then you commit to one or two simple things. You know, another way to get at that information, if you can't convene a panel or broaden your leadership with a drop of a hat or anything like that, is to put a statement on your website and say, our organization is really interested in inclusive sport excellence for all communities. We're in the process of gathering information. It's a long-term process, but we, you know, we want people to be aware of that. Like for me as a parent, when I'm looking for sports for my kids and I see a message like that, I'm not interested that anyone has all the answers, because this is an ongoing process. There's no end point. I'm interested to see that the intention is there, and that this is probably the kind of place where I could come to the coach after and say, like, hey, you know, can I just ask you about X? Or, you know, my child actually has a disability, and it may not be obvious, but if you can bring instructions this way, it would really be helpful. Or, you know, that's the kind of thing that really opens up dialogue. So again, if you can't convene conversations, you can put the message out in ways that invite it. And then in tandem with that, you can start thinking about really simple everyday things. Committing to pronouncing everyone's name correctly is a great example of an inclusive practice. You know, I remember at the meeting I was at, you know, the Sport for Life board meeting where I was invited, and we were having that conversation about disability inclusion. Big light bulbs that was just so great and so simple was people talking about registration forms. You know, what, like, are there any biases built into our form? Are we making assumptions that everyone needs the same thing? If yes, where can we open up an open text question about what someone needs? We can give them examples of the things that they might want to ask for and say anything else. And so it could be something related to disability, but it could also be something else. And if you can't address that in this particular activity, you can always come back to someone and say, that might not be something we can offer in this session, but we want to bring this back to our board and explore how we can get at this in the future. And this is such great information. Like, would you be willing to have a phone call or tell us more about it? Or are there other parents who might want to come have this discussion? So again, I know people get very overwhelmed by, you know, how do we do everything for everyone? But you don't have to. You can think of general ways of opening doors for conversations, and information just starts to flow. Like, once people know you want to ask questions, or you want to listen, that you're providing a safe space for them to bring some concerns forward, like, you'd just be amazed at how much detail and information starts to come in. And then you think as a group about, like, what are the ways in which we get at these things? Some of them will be really simple. Some you will not be able to address in the short term. Some will require a lot of resources that you don't have, but then you look around the community and say, who's already doing this well? Where's a model we can emulate? It might not be in sports. It might be in something else, but yeah. Anyway, I don't want to take all the bandwidth. I don't want to take all of, Flea probably has a lot to add here too, but I just, you know, I guess the biggest takeaway is, like, just don't get overwhelmed. Start where you are. A really good principle to guide you when you're not sure is nothing about us without us. And us is who all is in the community. So if you're not sure that you have all the input you need to move forward with an action, don't just jump to action. Take your time, have conversations, you know, be open to learning, be open to doing things a little bit differently. If they don't work out, you can always, you know, go back or go in a different direction. But, you know, treat it all as an, you know, an open-ended kind of adventure where you can kind of just make it work locally. What works in inner city Toronto isn't going to necessarily work in Cochrane. So again, if you can look for those exemplars in small towns or in places that have a lot in common, that can be a real kind of accelerator for this kind of development.
Absolutely. I was taking many notes, very great wisdom in there. And I think it is lining up so nicely with, I think, where many of the sports are in Cochrane, is they're just sort of leaning into this conversation, and we don't have to fix everything or address it or do it perfectly, like you said. So I think that's just kind of reinforced the direction that we're going with this, is even to come and talk to your committee. We just want to start with a conversation. I don't know that we're ready to change a program or change anything, because we don't, right? There's sort of just more of a relationship building. And probably the biggest thing is just being committed to listening and being open-minded and having that growth mindset, so that you're willing to take that information in, because I do see a lot of, especially sports that might already be over capacity or full, they might feel like this is adding one more thing on. And so by kind of breaking this into just really kind of baby steps and more relationship building to start with, I think we start to open that door a little bit more. So this is actually could be very rewarding. It could strengthen all of our sport organizations, bring in new resources and new people that we may not have engaged before. And so we're kind of trying to shift that thinking a little bit, so there's not a fear around it. So I thank you for all that wisdom. I'll be highlighting and bolding a lot of your comments in there. So I think what we'll do, Felija, is I'm going to hand it over to you to ask you, I don't know, building on what Jaya was talking about, but also what are some of those ideas? We had a short conversation a couple of weeks ago about like what would be some ideas to engage, say, families, for example, or even for the families that are feeling a little bit isolated. What would be some ways we could create social connection through some activities? Again, nothing, we haven't really started anything yet, just sort of planting seeds. So what are some of those seeds that are being planted for you right now?
So I think sometimes small groups work better than an open invite. I always love to start anything new with a small group. So I could use a couple of examples. There's the Boys and Girls Club. I'm collaborating with them and they're doing that Leaders in Training summer camp. So it basically runs from July 4th till the end of the week. So it's just those 5 days from 9:30 to 3:30. So the positive things in that, the days are set and the time is set and there's a consistency. So these are the things that families look into start. Now I'm talking newcomers, not people who are already settled in a routine, right? So they know, I reached out to all my clients and they know that perfect. Monday to Friday, we're gonna drop the child off at 9:30, pick them up at 3:30, pack their lunch. So it's, see, they work according, they feel safe. They know the connection. And they know that the child will be gone from this time to this time, right? So mom could do it, dad could do it, a friend could do it, but it's not like obliging someone to sit there for 2 hours while the child, because then start the other challenges of time and I won't be there or I could be, right? So that's one example. The other thing is something similar. I feel when there's consistency in time and days, it works better for the newcomers. You could put like, we're having 2 weeks soccer from this time to this time. It doesn't have to be a full day, but just is something like that. And register, maybe you could put children from 12 to 14 or 14 to 16, whatever, set like the age group. It's so easy then for me to reach out to my clients and say, hey, here's an option for your child. And they would sign in and you would get bang up an audience there. Awesome. That like, I always see that work so well. It could be hiking. It could be just leadership qualities. Maybe just do a tour around the community. It could be, we're going to be biking on this path from this time till this time, nature walking. And sports are always like, it could be at the Spray Lakes meeting point. And we have, you know, basketball from this time to this time, every day like this, something consistent. And I think everybody would start buying in and then you sort of build on that. And then the child will go back sharing their experience that, you know, I really love this. Oh my God, it was so fun. And they get into it.
Nice. So would one suggestion be for our sport organizations, if they do have some summer camps or some events that some families might not hear about, that you would be another avenue to share that? So it might be on the Spray Lakes website, might be on their website, but they might not see it. So that's another area we can encourage that. And then we can start to see, like, are there issues? Are there like opportunities for translation if that's needed? Are there opportunities for different ways of sharing that information? Mm-hmm. And even the registration information you were talking about, Jaya, how are we learning about all the families that are coming to our programs? So it's all kind of coming full circle. Yeah, I love it.
And very basic, because language, I'll just use the Boys and Girls Club since it's just the most recent that I'm working with, but their registration form, it was so basic. So name, age, email, phone number, and parents' name. That's it. So, and then of course, any, you know, medical issues, but So it was very easy for me to even like sit there and ask the family the questions and write it down and then submit it. When it's like a lengthy, long form, it's just people are like, okay, I don't have time for this right now. Let me get back to you. And right. then they don't.
Right. So kind of keep it simple, but also have enough opportunity, create that space for a relationship to have more information if needed, and maybe on the day of first
exactly.
drop off or things like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So same. Yeah. Like good advice, no matter what you're coaching or leading or teaching with young kids or with anyone really. So
yeah. And I don't see it a problem, like to get kids in. I just threw an email out to my newcomer fans because they wanted the new families particularly just to give them an opportunity. But so their focus was a bit more on that, but not to exclude the others, but it was just, they were like, we would love to have some new kids, right? Like give it a try. And I reached out and immediately I got emails back. Like it was just within minutes and they're registered, the kids. So I hope they enjoy it.
All right. Well, I think again, so much there to like rich conversation that I think we'll continue this conversation for sure. We'll share this information. Mm-hmm. A final question for each of you. We are just finishing up the Community Better Challenge, which was our month-long challenge of June for families and organizations in Cochrane to track their activity minutes on the Participaction app for the month of June. There's about 3 days left as of this recording, but by the time we share this, it will be over. So we're hoping Cochrane will make it into the top 10. But if there was a way that we made it into the number one spot, and we won that $100,000, what would you both of you like to see that money put towards in our community?
I would definitely opt for activities because like I already said, I'm such an advocate for active living and healthy living and make healthy choices. And definitely something like, I would love to introduce more horseback riding because I personally love it. And I feel it's such a beautiful natural connection in mental therapy as well between a horse and a person. It's just a matter of building that connection, but they're so costly. So it's such a hurdle to actually refer someone. And I've seen how depression, anxiety, because I'm just so anti-drug and, you know, to pop pills in is just not a solution for me. I feel it's just a temporary, you know, seal the deal type of thing, but that's it. That's one thing I like, equine therapy.
It's so interesting you say that. So we've hired a student to help us this month, and her family is really involved in the Pony Club, and they just logged, I think, 2,700 minutes for the month of June. So we can make that connection. I think that would be fantastic too, to start mm-hmm. to kind of build in the equine therapy or even just like opportunities there and what that could look like. So great.
And living in Cochrane, it would sort of help the new population integrate into the rancher sort of
a little
bit, right? So because integration comes both ways, and mostly people who are born and raised in Cochrane, they're very comfortable around horses and the farm and that, but that's not everybody's comfort. I know some people, they're like terrified of horses, and I was like, oh my god, no, they won't make you fall, I promise.
So I'm one of those that's kind of terrified, so I think I'll have to come and join you as well.
Yeah,
that's great. Thank you.
They're just my favorite, and I would love to see equine therapy for children to just to try and deal with their mental health and just for a better future for them.
Okay, we'll add that to the list. Absolutely. All right, and Jaya, how about you?
Winning the sports lottery is amazing. So how does one choose? But you know, I'm a big fan of multipliers. How do we make a multiplier out of something? So the first place my mind goes is usually, and I know this is not as fun and specific as Spalia's response, but bringing really impactful speakers, education, and literacy that is available to a lot of people, a lot of sport organizations or community organizations, has such a multiplying and amplifying effect. And so how cool would it be to have a pot of $1,000 where people could apply for, you know, to bring someone in, bring in you know, an athlete, for example, we'll go really sport specific. We go like, you know, a Paralympic athlete or someone who embodies excellence in sports, leadership, who comes to Cochrane and, you know, gives a talk or, you know, and hopefully that doesn't cost $100,000. So there's still money left over for other things or, you know, a couple of really cool inclusive sport pilots, you know, that if they're successful, you know, create great examples or find, you know, sustainable funding. Cause I think, you know, I guess like the last thing I would say, and Leah, I think kind of started to touch on this is like, we have a tendency to think that when we are centering a certain voice, we're, you know, we're doing something for a group, and we are, but the beneficiary is everyone. Like when we bring more people into sports in a way that is beneficial for them, I mean, what coach doesn't feel great when they see more and more kids from more and more backgrounds having a good time, succeeding, learning teamwork, learning problem solving, taking initiative, learning how to assert themselves, you know, learning to embrace loss for all of its challenges and lessons. Like there's so much to be gained for everyone. And I think, you know, when we have money and we're like, what can we do with this? If that money can bring better, bigger, different, like that gets us out of the box, right? Like it's not necessarily money to do, let's keep doing awesome things that are the same. It's like, let's just go like a little to the left or the right, or, you know, make the box into a circle this time, like reshape something just the littlest bit. So it would be so cool to see a pot of money for people who are open to taking the leadership, you know, to naming the kinds of things we're trying to solve in sports, the kinds of things we're trying to get better at, and to really step up and be those places in Cochrane where we see people like moving in step with where, you know, where society is going. So yeah, I'm all for some really well-funded pilots, and I'll sign my kids up for all of them.
Perfect. I love it. And you're also speaking our language at Sport for Life Cochrane too, because we think that's the way, as well as building the leadership capacity, diversifying the conversations, breaking down those silos. Yeah, so I think, although it might be a bit self-serving, I really like that idea as well, but I think we're really slowly breaking down those walls, I think, in, you know, either capacity-wise or focus or attitudes, all of those things are really, you know, starting to kind of merge, I guess, right now and percolate. So I'm very excited about the future of sport in our community. Is already great, and I think with the two of you and your support and all of this great leadership, it's only going to get better. So I want to thank you both for your time today, and yes, it's going to be of crucial importance to continue this conversation, so we'll look forward to that. And I also finally just want to thank all of the organizations and families and individuals who track their minutes this month, who supported the challenge and who celebrate the great sparklers like you. So yay Cochrane, and thank you so much, Leah and Jaya, and have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leah.
Take care.